Hello, and welcome to the Classroom Assessment SIG podcast. I'm very happy to introduce our guests today. I met two of them in Chicago at AERA in 2023 when they presented about cross-cutting concepts, organizing formative assessment across science classrooms. And I thought they'd be great guests for the podcast. So I'd like to first introduce our guests, and then we'll get down to talking about their work. We'll start with Aaron Furtak, a former high school science teacher and professor of STEM education at the University of Colorado Boulder. She studies how teachers learn about formative assessment and how to promote more just and equitable student learning through classroom assessment. Welcome, Aaron.
Thanks, Aaron. So glad to be here with you all today.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. Our next guest is Clarissa Deverell-Rico, a former middle school science teacher from the San Francisco Bay Area. She joined the partnership between CU Boulder and Aurora Public School back in 2018 when she began a doctorate program in STEM education with Aaron as her advisor. Clarissa has recently graduated, congratulations, and is interested in continuing to learn about how assessment can support a more equitable vision of K-12 science education. Welcome, Clarissa.
Thanks, Erin. Excited to be here.
Yay. Me too. Our next guest is Samantha Dubay, a former high school science teacher and current secondary science instructional coordinator. Her career goals are to ensure all students have access and opportunities to science and that their learning experiences are grounded in student-driven inquiry. Welcome, Samantha.
Hi, Erin. Thanks.
And last but not least, with over 21 years in education, Ryan Patrick Stewart has been working to support teachers, school leaders, and district systems to provide equitable opportunities for all students in K-12 to engage in authentic science and STEM experiences both in and outside of the classroom. Welcome, Ryan.
Hi, thank you.
Yes, I'm excited to have you all here. So let's start at the beginning. How did you come to work together?
A number of years ago, Sam and I were trying to figure out how to get more formative assessment into our science classrooms. And at the time, we had picked up Dr. Furtak's first book, and we're like, we have to do some work around this. And we emailed her and said, please help us think through how to do this in a very systematic way, all through K-12, but particularly in our secondary classrooms.
So, Erin, they emailed you. And when you saw their email, did you know right away? Did you respond? And then it grew from there?
Yeah, well, I was really excited to get their email because it was before Colorado had adopted the next generation or standards based on the next generation science standards. So I recognized immediately that Sam and Ryan were way out ahead of what was going on with reform in science education, in Colorado in particular, where we were kind of working with an old set of standards that were from 2009. Does that sound right? The last set of standards? Yeah. And so I knew it was a really great opportunity to really do some vision work that felt progressive and headed in the direction that reform was going in the country. And I have to credit one of my mentors, Bill Penuel, who's a colleague of mine at CU Boulder, who really was teaching me a lot about forming long-term research practice partnerships that are mutually beneficial and not just about Erin comes in and does one professional learning for 2 hours and then we never see each other again. It seemed like an opportunity to build something that would last. And this was 9 years ago now that Ryan sent that email. So we've really been able to have a long, committed relationship, which has been really a joy of mine for the last 9 years, I would say.
It's really lovely. So tell me about your current work. What are you collaborating on now?
Yeah, well, I can say something real quick. And I don't know, Sam, do you want to jump in too? I don't want to do all the talking here.
The current work that we're doing is an NSF partnership with Erin. And I'll let her dive into that a little bit more on what it is. But it's working with our physics teachers and writing a unit around electromagnetic waves or waves, which is a really hard unit to teach. And I think our teachers are really enjoying the opportunity to be a part of the making of it and learning about how three-dimensional learning works in the classroom and how do you develop units with such a partnership with scientists and the college. So I'll let Erin kind of talk more about what they're doing, because that's coming up, I feel like, next week, maybe?
Yeah, next week, a week from today. Yeah, I mean, I think Sam kind of summed it up real briefly. I think it's interesting. something that I wanted to highlight in our conversation was how we've been kind of stringing our work around classroom assessment together across lots of different grants since the very beginning. And so the one that we have now is from last year, but I think we've had, this is our third NSF grant together, and we've had a Spencer Research Practice Partnership grant, and we've been supported by University of Colorado Continuing Education and Outreach. And we've had little bits and pieces here and there that have allowed us to kind of focus on classroom assessment as kind of the main goal that we've been doing together with a lot of different various foci. So this newest one is in the context of a larger grant that's about space weather as a phenomenon. And we're using it as a chance to fund work that we're wanting to do to build units with good assessments in them for electromagnetism. But by getting kids to think about, is there weather in space and what does that have to do with me? But like sustaining the partnership across all these different projects has been kind of an interesting journey too.
Tell me more about that.
Yeah. Well, and I can, I had a feeling I could tell from your pregnant pause that maybe you were going to say that. Yeah. Well, I think it's, trying to think of a good way to say this. I think it can be tricky to kind of build a long-term committed research practice partnership with projects that are by nature for 2 years or 3 years or 5 years, and like really focus on something small. And something that Sam and Ryan said to me many years ago sticks with me all the time, where when we're thinking about a new project together, I'll be trying to right size it for the request for proposals, focus on ninth grade. Over the time, we'll focus on 9, 10, and 11 with the cross-cutting concepts work, which, Clarissa can talk about more too. And Sam and Ryan are always like, we have to change the whole system K through 12 anyway. Here we are with these little grants or these medium-sized grants focusing on just like one little bit of the system when the whole system has to change anyway. And so that's a tension I think we're always grappling with in the partnership. I mean, I don't know, Sam or Ann, if you want to say more about either any of that, but that's something I feel a lot, is like the weight of everything that you all are doing and the specificity of a lot of the grant projects we've had.
Ryan, tell me a little more about that. How do you string these all together? How do you keep teachers and yourselves engaged?
That's a good question. I think one thing we've tried really hard is grounding it in student experience and starting from what does it look like for a student to think about this, which I think led to some of the cross-cutting concept work that we did, particularly around energy and that being a DCI and a cross-cutting concept. To a kid, that was a theme that strung a lot of classes together. And so keeping in mind, so how do we change assessment so it's as authentic as possible for students? How do we change instruction so it's as authentic as possible for students? Because I still remember the day Aaron and I and Sam did a big PD on teachers feeling about assessment. And it was staggering how emotional that word is in education. And we took it from negative feelings to positive feelings to desired state and all of that. And I think that day really drove how we approached everything. And so really changing how kids engage in assessments and moving to a phenomenon-based assessment versus some traditional assessments in science, so that kids were not thinking of it as just an assessment, but like, oh, wow, this is an interesting context to try to figure out and use my science knowledge to explain. And then as Aaron was doing work in the secondary space, Sam and I were always trying to translate that down to elementary so that to our students in our system, K-12, there was a very systematic path in our units, our resources, our assessment. I don't think we're there yet, but that is our goal, that to a student, their instruction, their units, their assessment, one, are authentic, and two, as systematic and build upon each other as much as we possibly can, which when we got NGSS in the state helped a lot. But before that, we were creating a lot of those pieces ourselves and trying to go to as many national things and leverage what Aaron could bring us on the latest research and thinking at CU, so that, again, focusing on that student experience, that it was authentic and connected and systematic as much as possible. I think that's where we started and we keep coming back to. So when she talks about that tension in grant writing, so what would this be for a kid? How would we support teachers to ensure that a kid had, or any of our students had, the most, keep using authentic. That's sort of been our goal. True science as much as possible. That's kind of been our North Star, I would say.
I mean, that's a great start to aim for. That idea of the process and the language and the students' understanding from K to 12, that it all fits together in some way. That's awesome. And the teachers in the districts are excited about this?
I can start and I'll let Sam finish particularly, but I think they're starting to see it. I think that day, if we were to replicate that day where we elicited all of their feelings about assessment now, I think we would be farther down the continuum from moving assessment from a negative word to a positive word. Again, I don't know that we've gotten there yet, but we're a little farther down and are like, wait a minute, what can I learn now? How do I use this to think about things differently than I think that day that we originally started?
So, Clarissa, you joined this team a little later on. Tell me how you found your way to this work. Did Erin invite you as her your advisor?
Yeah, so I came in to kind of like in the middle of a project called the Aspire Project, and it was already like in its second round, right, Erin? So I very much came into like the thick of things. And so it was a lot for me to kind of take up, but it was really cool to then, once I kind of understood all of the moving parts to what was going on, like it was really cool to be a part of and see kind of all of the behind the scenes things that were happening. And I got to support some other grad students in facilitating some of the professional learning communities with teachers. And I got to come in and observe some of the classroom teachers at some of the high schools. So it was a really cool experience and just kind of connecting back to the cross-cutting concept of energy and matter. It was really a new experience for me having, you know, been in the classroom for 7 years. And I came from California where NGSS had been adopted. But it was interesting, like my experience with NGSS had been like, we weren't really touching the cross-cutting concepts yet, at least just not within my experience where I was. Mm-hmm. And so it was really interesting to see like how, you know, the team and the folks at Aurora Public Schools were really keen on like really leveraging that and seeing how it would thread through all the different domains, right? Like, you know, biology, chemistry, physics. And it was cool to see how, you know, on the research side, the university side, like there was a learning progression developed for energy and matter. And that really was like this kind of grounding tool for a lot of things. It was this tool to support the teachers through the professional learning community meetings, through their work, like literally in the moment in the classroom, you could kind of see like how teachers were like kind of looking for certain indicators on the learning progression kind of in real time. And it was also a lens for us on the research side to kind of analyze some of the data that came back from observing classrooms and what students were doing with their modeling of different phenomena. And of course, you know, another kind of underlying thing here, connecting back to Erin's book on the formative assessment feedback cycle, that was another thing that really, I think, guided the work. That was kind of, I don't know, it was all very like, trying to find the right word, beautifully aligned and like support, mutually supportive. But yeah, it was a really cool experience for me to be a part of and to see this really big project, great partnership. And I really learned a lot from that experience.
That's awesome. And so what was that shift like? How did the PLCs run when you entered into them?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was cool to see. I was thinking about this when you asked the question of like, how have the teachers responded to this work? And I know that in the ones that I was participating in, the teachers, it was cool to, I think the approach to take of, again, with Erin saying like, this is a partnership. This isn't meant to be like a top-down, you know, university, like we know everything. It's like, no, we want to do this in partnership with you. We want to leverage teachers' expertise of, you know, their teaching practices and their students. And I think it was cool to see how much the teachers that I was involved with, like really took ownership of what was happening. You know, at times they were kind of brainstorming different phenomena that could be the basis for a formative assessment. Just kind of seeing them work together, it was often, you know, a group of three or a group of four teachers, and then somebody, one of the grad students from the university side, just helping facilitate. But yeah, I mean, it was great to see how much I saw the teachers really taking ownership of this work and really wanting to have that ownership, I think, themselves.
That sounds amazing. Erin and Ryan, have you had similar experiences working with the teachers?
I'm getting signals from Ryan. I'll just say that I think
As Clarissa was talking, I thought of two things. One of them was, again, what she was saying about the all these great different kinds of expertise that the teachers were bringing. And I was so excited to have Clarissa join our team because I thought, here is a person who has taught the NGSS where SEAL feels in some cases just, I don't want to say hypothetical, but we were just kind of on the beginnings of shifting our system in Colorado. And so to have Clarissa come with her great knowledge of practice and willingness to just dive in and get going, that was amazing. And at the university, we had people working on that project who had been physics teachers and chemistry teachers and people who had training in different kinds of statistical analyses and assessment and people like me who were more kind of with science and professional learning. So it just took a lot of different experiences in order to kind of help that project to happen. And something else that I think was really cool about that cross-cutting concepts project in particular is that what we're asking teachers to do with informal classroom assessment in the NGSS is so hard, where it's like, think about a phenomenon like how a hot pack warms up somebody's hands when they're cold, or why if I eat a protein bar when I'm exercising, that helps me have more energy. And then to help kids develop scientific explanations for that is really tricky. And especially when the kids are kind of throwing all their amazing everyday experiences at that, which might not map onto the way that we as teachers learn science in school. And so finding ways to navigate students' ideas, like the learning progression, which is like, here's some things I want to listen for. And the students may not say it that way, but they're talking about air. Maybe that's an opportunity to like pick up on the idea of, you know, what do you mean about air? How does air help you breathe? And what is it in air? So we can kind of help the students, you know, to use language that Clarissa used in her dissertation, like to do sense making and to guide the students in that. It's really hard to do. And we saw some great examples of teachers learning to do that with the learning progression and then teachers who were already doing it kind of stepping even farther forward in their practice. And we're always really excited to learn with them and from them because we don't necessarily know all the answers about how to do this. And so it's really a journey of collaborative learning, I guess. I'm interested in what Ryan wants to add to that too.
No, I think that's a great point. I think over the years of the 9 years we've done this, I think there's been a shift in the conversation among teachers. So you heard about assessment before, a kid knows a DCI piece of information or doesn't know it. And as they are talking about it and leveraging the student work and the explanations from the phenomenon Aaron talked about, the conversation started to shift. So now what do we know? What little pieces of information may be unfinished learning or what sense making do they still need to have? And they're grappling with what does that mean? I think the other thing it did is it caused some tension, but it forced our biology teachers and our chemistry teachers and our physics teachers to start realizing how the domains are connected, which I think is the beauty of NGSS. But in practicality, that's really hard when still in high school. They're designated as separate courses, and they're trying to figure out and grapple with, well, wait a minute, this concept in physics, again, energy in particular, is transferred in biology. And if they don't know this, then bio becomes that much harder and the chemistry becomes that much more complex. But watch it as it grows over the course of the 3 years, because currently we teach physics in ninth grade, chemistry in 10th, and bio is our end. To tell again that story of energy is such a big concept at both a DCI and a cross-cutting concept. And so I think it's starting to shift those conversations as they're working on developing their assessments now in high school. They're having some, I call it like professional debate, which is just a different, my kids know it or they didn't know it. There's this grapple with, well, what does this piece mean? And how did we know this? And what could we do here? And does this phenomenon do what we need it to do in a different way? And so just all of that knowledge. And then thinking about their formative assessments. Again, that's the first book we read about. I still have that picture of Aaron's stair step going, oh my gosh, this makes so much sense in a storyline. How do we help kids build not only within a course or a unit, but also across the grade levels in high school so that they have a comprehensive understanding of science? So
it sounds like a real sea change, not just, you know, having these teachers have these conversations across what they probably conceptualized as very different topics, and also a sea change for the students. Yes. These phenomena based discussions are very different probably than some of the ways they've learned science in the past. When you observe in the classrooms, what does that look like? Can you think of an example?
Okay. I mean, Clarissa, I was going to say, yeah.
I can jump in. But yeah, I'm curious what Ryan and Sam have to say. I know they go all over the district. So Yeah. So, you know, what comes to mind is like a couple classroom videos that Erin and I have looked at a lot, you know, for kind of analyzing on our end. But like, you know, what stands out is teachers really engaging students in leveraging like their own experiences and their own like everyday knowledge and ways of knowing, and really using that to kind of bridge together with the science that they're trying to figure out around this phenomenon. And it's really cool, again, to see like this kind of three-dimensional, you know, to use the NGSS jargon of, you know, using the DCI, using the practices, a lot of times modeling, and then of course the cross-cutting concept of energy and matter. It's really amazing to kind of see all of this working in real time and seeing teachers like just really create a lot of space, like safe space for students to connect to their own experiences, right? So there was like one phenomenon that we did about at high elevation, why do athletes get more fatigue if they're coming from sea level? And, you know, you see students thinking about like, you know, different experiences that they've had, or just different, not maybe their own experiences, but connecting to like, oh yeah, I've seen this one team that just doesn't do well when they go to this other professional, you know, if it's like a tournament or something, a professional tournament, like they just don't do as well as they do when they're at home. So it was really neat to kind of connect or to see how teachers were allowing that space for students to even just make sense of this phenomenon from the get-go. And then to start leveraging like, okay, so what do you think is going on? Like, what are the reasons? And then kind of threading that really like masterfully with, okay, I'm in the back of my mind as a teacher, I'm also thinking about like this energy and matter. And like, you know, if it's in biology, like having to connect to cellular respiration. And so really like masterfully, like kind of threading this all together. And it's really cool to see, but I'm curious, I don't know if Erin's watched all these videos with me, if you want to jump in and add anything, and Rayanne and Sam, like really curious what you've seen too.
I think the big thing that we have noticed in classrooms is the need and support that a high quality curriculum gives that helps make the connections of the three dimensions. I think what the teachers are experiencing with Erin is creating it and being a curriculum developer around 3D is very time intensive, and I think they love the creative side of it. I think they get overwhelmed with thinking about the storyline and how do you build that and how do you create a phenomenon? Like, you really have to know a lot of the science in order to build some of that. And I don't know that we have provided teachers a space to be able to develop those things yet. And so I think that's why the high quality curriculums are so important in this space, is until we allow the space for teachers to approximate in that. I think the thing that they love to do is they love to deliver it. And so once they're in the instruction and it's the enactment of the work, they love the excitement of the kids and they feed off of that energy. And you can just see the classroom and not just engagement, but I would say just the cognitive engagement maybe across the board from both the teacher and the student is extremely elevated. So I think a lot of the work that we see Erin has done in the past and Clarissa has done in the past with our teachers and the PLCs and helping them understand storylines, they love that work and they love watching it play out with kids. I think they really have enjoyed not having to be the ones developing it and being the ones who actually get to feel how it, like the delivery. And that has caused them more excitement to dig deeper into the three dimensions, right? I think when they were having to create it and then they were going out and trying it on, that was a lot of a cognitive load and cognitive calories for a teacher. And I think when they got to see how the kids interacted with the resource, it gave them a whole different level of ability to engage in why we write the curriculum the way we do. And the two teachers that Erin's working with are probably two of our front runners on just the enjoyment of how the three dimensions work together in the classroom. And because they've seen kids get so excited, they tend to have the stamina to really like dig in the summer and write outside of their duty time, right? So I don't know if that helped paint the picture of that. Any observations? But I would say that you see an elevated level of excitement and joy for learning from both kids and teachers in that space.
Sorry, I really like the term, and I'll go back on track in a second, cognitive calories. That's a nice way to put that. And I think I agree. Like, what I'm hearing you say is that it's a lot to ask of teachers to have not only the deep knowledge of their subject matter, but also, you know, teaching it in a very different way and being able to bounce and be really flexible when these students provide examples from their own experience, and to be able to, like Clarissa said, make those connections between high altitudes and athletes to the concepts you are trying to circle back around to. There's a lot of moving parts. Yes.
Yes. Lots of moving parts.
And that makes me think that, looping back to something Ryan said several minutes ago about one of our first professional learnings that we facilitated at, like, you know, 7 a.m. in the dead of winter at one of these late start Wednesdays when it's still dark, you know, we're drinking our coffee. But that session, where all this kind of emotion associated with assessment and teachers' own lived experiences around it, left a huge impression on me too, Ryan. And so I love that you kind of mentioned that. And it really makes me wonder, what would that look like if we were to do that again this fall? Because it's a thing, seems like we all have a feeling that the conversation has really shifted. And it would be just so interesting, knowing that some of the teachers are the same and some of them have come in since then. I don't know. As a researcher, that's a really interesting question for me.
Did you have that first meeting recorded, or do you have any artifacts from that meeting?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, and early on, and we probably don't do this as much as we did early on in the partnership, but we used to record all of our meetings together. So I still have some of these recordings of Sam and Ryan and I and other members of the former graduate students who have now moved on to other positions, sitting and, like, grappling with, you know, not just planning for, but even reflecting on, you know, what did we learn and where do we go from here? And it was in those conversations, you know, to give Sam and Ryan credit, I think I was coming to those conversations really focused on the DCIs, the disciplinary core ideas in science and engineering practices, because those were the kind of older versions, older elements of the new standards. But it was Sam and Ryan that were like, what about the cross-cutting concepts? These are really interesting, you know, and it was conversations with them that led us as a kind of partnership to think this seems like this has some legs. And we ended up doing some really cool work in that area, you know, based upon those kinds of conversations. So yes, the long answer to your question, we do have artifacts of all that.
I think it would be very interesting to go back and talk to some of those teachers and see what they were saying about assessment 9 years ago and what's being said about assessment now. That'd be fascinating. Totally agree. So what else would you like to tell me about your work?
I think one of the biggest gains that we as a district and as a system have gotten out of the partnership with Erin and her team is a way for us to have a place to approximate, for Ryan and I to have a place to approximate and talk through what assessment might look like in a space with someone who's in the research and is very knowledgeable about the research, but also can provide us, for lack of a better term, like guardrails of like, no, stay like within this space, right? I mean, as much as Erin says we provide her guardrails, it's also like, well, what's doable, right? If we were gonna do research, and what would be a question we could answer? I think those conversations are really helpful when we're thinking about, like, how do we systematize this or how do we scale it up? So while, yes, we're doing research in a smaller area of the system, we are really trying to take that knowledge and understanding and data and apply that to different parts of the system, right? And scale it up. So the idea of a three-dimensional assessment, I think Erin and her team really developed Ryan and I on, like, what do those look like and how do you build those? And going through that process just from that first meeting and then creating these common formative assessments with her team, with Erin's team and CU Boulder, kind of gave us a protocol for, like, and it's not that she scripted it out or said, here's the protocol to how to write it, but it was through the development and the design, we kind of developed a protocol on how we would write them. And so we've extended that down into the middle school space and into the elementary space. On how do we hold teacher professional learnings And we write, we help, we have them go through the same kind of protocol or process that Erin did in this smaller setting in those spaces, and have the teachers help us write these. And so we're giving them an understanding of how an assessment is built, but also what's different between a common formative assessment that's a district check versus what's a formative assessment within your classroom for a PLC versus what is the CMAS and the state test, and how does that data fit into this? And then ultimately, like, teachers came to understand, well, it's really hard to write a three-dimensional test in this platform of Illuminate. And so then they were ready to have the conversation around, like, yeah, it's really a performance assessment or a performance task. Mm-hmm. And so we took her same protocol and we've applied it into the performance task space. And so in 9th grade and 10th grade and 11th grade, we have built performance tasks along with the common formative assessment. So I think what I really valued in the partnership is her push in helping us think through what's a balanced assessment system versus what is just a formative assessment. I don't know how much that made sense.
Oh, it made perfect sense. And it's, as you were saying it, I'm sort of thinking about the idea of the deep expertise every member of the team is bringing. The idea that everyone here has value and is providing each other with guardrails and guidance. And the other thing that I really appreciated is the idea that you're bringing what you're learning in this team to other teachers in your district, and they seem to be really embracing it. It sounds wonderful. It really, really does. So I have to ask for our listeners, is there anything, if we're interested in what you're working on, are there any readings or authors that you would recommend we look into?
Well, I'll just say that, you know, I think we're always kind of looking forward toward kind of what we're learning next. And so, you know, from this conversation, I'm getting really excited about getting together with the teachers and doing some fun curriculum design with sticky notes and, you know, whiteboard markers and all the fun things that we use when we do that co-learning together. And I'll just say that my thinking about assessment, even in the last 9 years, has really been informed by, I wanted to pull this book off my shelf, which is, it's kind of old, older now, it's more than 10 years old, Assessment Equity and Opportunity to Learn. That is an edited book that really encourages us to take a more expansive view of what counts as classroom assessment and think about how there's multiple participants and they all have lived histories, and how do we use things like tools and routines to help us develop things like assessments, and how do those support particular types of outcomes. And it's a really, I think, accessible way of thinking about like theory and how that moves into practice. I think it's informed our partnership in terms of thinking about, we can't just design good tasks, that there's so much bigger than that. It's about, you know, teachers and their learning, as Sam and Ryan were talking about. It's about who the kids are and what their experiences are and how we facilitate that in the classroom, like Clarissa was saying. So I would recommend that book highly to anyone who's listening.
Thank you. And then my concluding question is, and we've already addressed it a little, and Erin, you just said it as well. The next steps are working with physics teachers. Is that who you're getting together with next week?
Yes. Yeah, we have speaking of differential expertise again, with the support of our new NSF project, we're bringing a group of astrophysicists and satellite designers together with the science teachers and educational simulation designer to do some cool stuff. And the thing that I really love about it is that the scientists are really eager to learn more about the new science standards and how we're teaching science in school now from the teachers. And the teachers are really keen to like hang out with the scientists and see what they know about satellite design. And we're hoping to come out with a cool performance assessment, maybe based on an interactive simulation where kids can build and fly their own satellites virtually, and then even think about like what kind of materials would be ideal for satellite design. So it's one of these things where we get together and we don't know exactly what we're going to make, but I'm very sure it's going to be awesome when it's done.
That sounds amazing. Really, really. And Clarissa, will you be participating in this work?
Sadly, no. As a post-grad now, I have a postdoc position elsewhere, but I'm cheering on the sidelines for this work and really excited to see where it goes.
Well, congratulations on your postdoc. And that's great. Everyone needs a cheerleader, right? Well, thank you all so much for coming and spending a little time with me on Zoom to record this. And I hope you all have very lovely summers and very productive meetings with science and astrophysicists and teachers and all stakeholders involved. Yes.
Thanks so much. It's been great to join you today.
Yes. Thank you. Sarah.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Oh, it was absolutely my pleasure. Have a great summer.